Hello all. This is Michelle Masurgian for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, and my guest today is Keith Brown. Keith, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Keith, what are you doing today? Because I know you were the former project director for the Albany LEAD program, but what are you doing today?
Yeah, so my work today, I'm still involved in things like pre-arrest diversion and other harm reduction-based strategies around issues of substance use, mental health, and poverty. And I also have the direct experience working within an active law enforcement assisted diversion program. So for folks who don't know, law enforcement assisted diversion or LEAD is a pre-arrest diversion model. And the idea is to get folks who are experiencing challenges and contact with the police that are specifically related to substance use, mental health, or poverty, poverty being inclusive of homelessness as well, out of the criminal justice system on a pre-arrest basis and into harm reduction, person-centered, ongoing case management as a way to address complex needs. And Albany, folks might not be aware, but Albany, New York, has such a program that's been in operation for several years.
And the Center for Law and Justice put out a report in 2019 stating that few residents even know about Albany's LEAD program. Is this the kind of program, these police diversion programs, that folks are talking about when we hear about defunding the police?
So, you know, I view things like law enforcement assisted diversion and other diversion models as a potential step in the right direction when implemented effectively. To be really frank, I think when we talk about reinvesting or defunding and investment into other structural interventions that are more effective than criminal justice in addressing these issues, I think it's what I would say would be kind of a very minor step toward that. But what they can do is demonstrate in a very meaningful way for both communities, municipalities, and even law enforcement themselves that arrest, incarceration, and the cycle of our court system and all of that is not an effective means to deal with most issues, especially issues that most people would agree are non-violent, or I should say non-public safety threats. You know, someone who is experiencing homelessness using drugs in and of itself is not, in my view, a public safety threat. And so to deal with that in an arrest and incarceration capacity doesn't actually address the reasons why that person is in contact with the police in the first place. So to your point, you know, I think that things like LEAD are being held up by many municipalities, especially in the current climate, as reform efforts in and of themselves. I don't view them as the be-all, end-all of what would be an effective reform measure. But like I said, I do recognize that for some places, it can be a step in the right direction. But again, that's if it's done effectively, which for me means that it's grounded in the community. It's driven by the local civil rights and social justice organizations, and that it's really firmly rooted in a harm reduction philosophy that is not punitive and carceral like many of our other interventions, like, for example, drug court is.
In that vein, studies consistently show that 10 to 20% of law enforcement calls do involve a mental health issue, you know, from behavior that falls under the all-purpose umbrella of public nuisance, like vagrancy, loitering, urinating in public, and then coupled with alcohol or drugs can make a really very unstable individual. What programs would you see, given some of those minor steps that you were talking about, that a diversion program would do?
Yeah, so I tend to look at these things in either structural, you know, long-term change ways or as short-term interventions. And so to me, the larger thing that we should be talking about, and I think people are talking about when in the defunding movement spaces and in the dialogue we're having is what's happened over the last decades. We've eliminated or reduced the social safety nets that existed for people who were experiencing, you know, various different challenges, including, you know, mental health, including substance use, including homelessness and poverty. So we basically gutted those, and we've kind of as a society decided that we would move all of that stuff into the purvey of law enforcement. And so the longer term challenge we have and the dialogue we need to be having here is how do we rebuild and reinvest in those structural interventions in a way that that is both more meaningful toward people being healthy, happy, but also to reducing those public nuisance issues that folks experience. So for me, that looks like robust housing first options, which, you know, obviously you'd be familiar with, you know, the idea that there are no preconditions for someone getting housing, that it's come as you are, that if you are experiencing mental health symptoms or you're using substances or whatever, that you are provided with housing as the first step, not as the last step in some behavior change trajectory. So I think that's number one. Number two is that we need obviously to invest, you know, substantially at higher levels than we're currently doing in our mental health infrastructure. And that means at all places. That's both from psychiatrists all the way down to, you know, day facilities where people can go, and clubhouses and peer supports. And frankly, we need to do a much better job of having people who are trauma informed in all of our aspects of healthcare, including in our mental health sphere. And so there is, like, you know, in most places, in my experience as a service provider, is that in most places, if someone has Medicaid and has an extensive trauma history, you can't even find them effective treatment for that. So, you know, it just perpetuates a lot of these cycles. So that's really the structural stuff that we need to, just some of the structural issues we need to look at, including, frankly, decriminalizing the use and possession of all substances as a way of getting that out of the purvey of law enforcement. And once we do that, we can significantly reinvest those in harm reduction services, in safe supply interventions that have been effective in many places, in things like safer consumption spaces, in things like much more robust, you know, peer networks, things like that. So, and then the short-term stuff that tends to happen is things like crisis intervention teams, which are, you know, either law enforcement that are trained in things like de-escalation and other kind of mental health first aid stuff, and or embedding of social workers or mental health professionals with police departments as a means to intervene when someone is experiencing some type of mental health crisis. And so those things have some effectiveness. I mean, the data shows that they can de-escalate situations much more effectively. But I would be remiss if I didn't name that that social work and social workers can be actively part of the same carceral system that law enforcement plays a role in. And so I think we need to be very, very careful about the idea that embedding social workers with police departments is really an effective means to do any of what we're talking about right now.
And talking about social workers, I understand there's also a huge workforce vacuum with just psychiatrists, social workers, case manager, community outreach. Just even if we had the money, do we even have the labor force?
Yeah, so I think it's a chicken or the egg argument here, right? Where it's do we have the money to pay those people in the first place? And so what's creating the issue is that there's a shortage of the amount of money that we need to pay those people, or is there a shortage of those people? And I don't know the exact answer to that, except to say that that at times in the past, when we've made major investments in workforce in different areas, and we can pay people you know, a living wage and an effective wage, that you can recruit people for those jobs, you know. And unfortunately, we're in a situation right now in our country where the people who deal with our most vulnerable and our most at need folks, including our, you know, children and our people who are disabled and our elders, are the people who get paid the least amount of money. And so, you know, and I think that's a real travesty. And so we need to really upend all of these structures and make some really tough decisions, or I wouldn't see them as tough decisions. I would see them as pretty easy decisions. They're just not very politically palatable in many places. The bottom line is arrest and incarceration has not worked to address the issues we're talking about, and has put people in harm's way. And we need to have a really honest dialogue about how we flip that around.
And I'm going to have to wrap up. Is there anything else you want to share before we close out the program?
The thing that will be the most effective is if we center the people with lived experience here as the ones driving our policies and the changes that we're trying to make here.
Thank you, Keith, for your time today, and stay safe. This is Michelle Masurgeon for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.